This is RSBNB Update, episode 491, recorded Friday, November 14th, 2014. Thriftiness, part 2. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update, another podcast that I've been waiting and waiting oh so long to deliver. Lost City of the Elves, Part 2, Thriftiness. And joining us this week is Mr. Bistro from RSBNB Informer once again.
Hello.
Nice to have you with us, and thank you for stepping up to come and visit with us once again here at the show. I know you mentioned that you liked doing it last time, so I thought, oh, it's Elf City. Might as well extend an invite to you, seeing as, you know, you have high-level dungeoneering, and that is definitely one of the core features of this week's update.
I do, and yes, it is.
So, Thriftiness, part two. Before we begin, I'm just going to put this out there that a certain part of this update was totally unsurprised and is undoubtedly one of my three favorite parts this week, but we'll get to that later. So I'm going to turn this over to you right now. So let's just pick your favorite elf clan in batch two and let's start right there.
Oh boy. Well, I think my favorite elf clan, it has to be right now, just because I got done with agility, the Heffen clan.
All right.
I definitely utilized that course and got 99 agility a couple days ago. So
nice. So Heffen is agility and prayer, and this is something that was mentioned numerous times in design documents, forum postings, podcasts. Is how exactly do you combine agility and prayer? I mean, there's no real tight integration here, but they both do have a little bit of a interaction atop the Heffen Mountain. So
the only way you can do it is by literally jumping over the cathedral.
Yeah, that's right. So agility or prayer? Let's start with agility, since you said you just got 99 in that. The first thing that becomes apparent in the Heffen area of Thriftiness is the Serenity Post, which is basically six little pedestals that you can jump onto and match the pose demonstrated by Lady Heffen. So let's just essentially call this elf yoga. Sound good?
Yeah, that fits.
Basically, all you need to do is you jump up there, click a button, and you imitate the pose, and you can get up to 20,000 agility XP per day.
Yeah, it's really nice, especially when you have the bonus experience for it, because then you're just staying in one place and getting 40k per day. It's great.
So is this, I mean, I guess you, I'm not sure how close you were to 99 agility when this came out, but is this the way you finished it, or did you use the course?
I did a little bit of both. I also had daily challenges, and I re-rolled them when I didn't get it. This was 2 days worth, and I went from beginning at 97 to 99.
Wow.
Which is insane.
And how much bonus XP did you use?
About 400k.
Oh, okay. So not that much, but still a decent amount. Okay. Then we also got the agility course, which I think, you know, is a breath of fresh air that agility has needed for a long time.
It's definitely different. I really, really like the mechanic of velocity. It's really nice, especially because you can also toggle it off.
Yeah, so you don't want to, you might not want to skip a certain objective, or, you know, you got a shortcut you can take back down to the main starting point, you turn velocity off. So basically, what happens is you move through the agility course as you move through a standard agility course. But as you're moving through the obstacles, you accumulate, as we said, velocity, which means when you get to 100% velocity, you get to skip the next obstacle, and it does it for you automatically without you needing to click. And for me, this has enabled runs to be done in about 30 seconds, give or take.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's kind of different, though. I don't think there's any other course that actually uses cutscenes.
No.
Like this one does. That can be kind of annoying if you're doing it for hours and hours.
All right, why?
It's just kind of the flash of screen and the move or the shift of your camera angle.
Oh, okay.
That's just a little gripe that I had, but otherwise, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, because, yeah. I mean, I guess if you position your camera in such a way that when you get out of the cutscene, you're in a position where you can't see where to click next, that could, you know, waste a couple seconds here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if this is something that is an acquired taste from getting 99 in agility, or if this is just due to this agility course, but I think because you sometimes skip the next obstacle through the velocity mechanic, it doesn't feel as monotonous as agility once did. Now, I don't know if this is because I have 99 and I'm, you know, well established in, oh, this is agility. That's just the way it works. Or if it's the course mechanics talking to me.
No, I think it's definitely a breath of fresh air. There, like I said, there isn't any other course like this. And having you and me almost going completely to 99 without this course, you can definitely tell that there's a difference.
All right.
It's pretty good.
Well, I'll take your word for it then. Because I got agility way back when. I started it just before the advanced Barbarian and Gnome courses came out and finished it actually at the Gnome course. So that is about when I got 99. So I really haven't done much agility training since then. And let's also not forget the rewards you can get when you complete a lap. Cosmetic outfit, 4 emotes, lore book pages, and Elf City skilling items.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get a crystal acorn by any chance?
I did.
Okay.
But I only got one of them. I probably would have gotten more if I used the light familiar.
Right.
Because when you use that, increases the chances for rare drops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk about him later. Or it, I guess. But I'm doing this course because I want a crystal acorn seed. It's something that I've been chasing since this came out, since the first day. But more on that later. And the light familiar. Lore book page is always good. Now on to prayer, the corrupted Saren stone. So basically, this is AFK prayer training. You purchase a stone from the monk in the cathedral, and then you just click on the corrupted Saren stone and you cleanse it. I have 99 prayer, so I had some difficulty wasting money on this, and I actually didn't waste money on one of these stones, so I don't know if this is a daily thing or you can just keep doing it forever, but
you can do it forever. I tried it out even though I have 99 prayer, and it's expensive. It's really, really expensive.
Yeah.
I would only recommend doing this if you have a ton of money and the light of or voice of Saren is on that area.
Right.
Because otherwise it's just not going to be worth it for you to do. Just use somebody's altar.
So how much XP did you get from one of the stones in the cleansing process?
Oh, man. That I can't really remember. It was a nice drop. At the very beginning, you get a bigger experience drop, and then the drop is smaller throughout the rest of the kind of AFK while you sit there. It kind of works similar to the tuning harps over in one of the other areas of the city. I forgot what that place is called, but you sit there and you get this dust that you can use to make equipment.
Harmonic dust?
Yeah, the harmonic. Yeah. Those also work similar. You get a big drop and then you get a smaller set of drops until it kind of cycles through and it starts over again.
9,300 XP per stone.
Okay.
So, let's see, what were they selling for? I know it was pretty expensive.
Yeah, it was over 100K.
130K per stone for
Yeah.
9.3K prayer XP.
Yeah, so like, yeah, very expensive.
And I mean, I don't know why you need to do this with open altars. I guess it's a nice money sink after all, but you just go to the open altar world, somebody's always going to have a gilded altar open with, Marantil and the whole nine yards burning, and you just set your house teleport to the right thing, appear outside, and in you go, and back and forth, and your prayer training is done.
Yeah, but I can see that why they did put it in there, for transition warning, for the fact that you can train prayer, which can be used on those stones for the moss, I think that is, that
Yeah,
grows
the
on them.
harmony pillars. And that's exactly the right time to mention that, because my first one that I want to talk about is Melior, which is Herblore in Dungeoneering. So now you mentioned that you get the amount of XP from cleansing the stone, and then if you have a harmony pillar tuned to prayer, you get a certain amount of harmonic moss once it's done. And basically, this is one of the new farming attractions in this area, is that you have these four pillars that are coming up out of the ground. You can buy the moss seeds for 50K each from the farmer, or get them as a drop from any of the number of NPCs in Priftiness. But the point is you plant the moss, and then once you get 200K XP, the moss is done growing. And this is a very interesting way of advancing farming because, it's not exactly the same way that, planting a herb goes and you just let it go and it works on its own timer. This grows based on how fast you train, and at the end of the day, this moss that you're given from this gives you farming XP, and it also lets you use the moss to make perfect juju potions.
Yeah, I didn't look too much into perfect juju potions. What do they do differently? Do they just
Well,
enhance?
they don't enhance what the ability did. They just add a secondary effect onto them.
Okay.
Like, for example, the perfect juju farming potion gives you the ability of actually receiving some moss when checking another farming patch, a small percent chance, 5%, and 25% chance of receiving double harmony moss from the harmony pillars. So there are little things like that. One thing people will probably be happy about is the Juju Mining Potion. The perfect version of that brings back the chance of auto banking or auto smithing ores when mining. I know lots of people were upset about that when the porters came out with divination. So that's some of the things that the perfects do. We also got a new perfect agility potion. This also, ensures that one of two things will happen when you're drinking the potion. Either the window shortcut is open or the light creature will be on top of the roof. So it always guarantees that there will be a way to complete the agility course in a shorter way. Did you know about this?
I didn't, but I wouldn't have had time for the moss to grow.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Prayer, 5% XP increase from gilded altars, 5% XP increase from the cleansing the corrupted Saren stone. Perfect Juju Herb Lore, 10% additional chance of finding a recipe in Dungeoneering, which we'll get to in just a bit. 5% additional XP when making combination potions. And the Dungeoneering one, 5% addition to damage dealt when in a dungeon. And dungeon skill doors require two less levels. So that's good in that, you don't need to always have the top end, oh, I need 106 smithing for this door. Shoot. So, yeah, those are some of the Juju perfect potions. To me, that this isn't really the story out of this area. You want to, well, maybe the Dungeoneering Dungeon is, because I can't go down there, but I know you can. You want to tell us about that first?
Yeah, sure. So there were two dungeons released. Resource dungeons, the first one you can access at level 95 Dungeoneering. As always, upon entering, you get good experience just on the side, but what's inside is awesome. The 95 Dungeoneering one, inside that, there is a Bloodwood tree, as well as some random spawning divine locations. So if you don't have the divination level to make some good divine locations, you can go in there and hopefully get lucky with them.
So I assume that these divine locations count toward your daily gathering bonus off the location.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. In there is also Grenwalls and Pyas. You can catch them. So it's kind of, I don't know, just a hunter resource dungeon as well. They also have a greater chance for crystal implings in there, so that's good. But the main attraction is the Garajo Horde Stalker, who can give you Dungeoneering cards. And what these cards do is they enhance what you can do in a dungeon. You can get one of those per day.
Do you have any idea what kind of cards they give? Or?
Oh yeah, I've actually used one myself so far. I've used the Reversing Phoenix card. That increases your chance of Slayer creatures in the dungeon. And some of these are actually really overpowered, and I know that a lot of people are trying to go for this consistent Yak card, where you can get a guaranteed combination potion recipe at a door, and you will not get a penalty after your second death. So that's a really good card. They also have a card that allows you to open skill doors without meeting a level requirement.
Yeah, that's overpowered.
There's one called the Cloning Mosquito card, which doubles your tokens for the dungeon. That one's kind of nice. The Peering Ibis card, it, for the dungeon, gives you 1.5 times bonus experience for one floor. That one is good if you're going for 120. They got a Protecting Titan card, which halves boss's damage to you.
That's definitely useful.
And other damage received is reduced by 5. And the only way I would like find that one extremely useful is in hard mode, because Dungeoneering's just gotten so easy these days that I probably wouldn't even use the card.
Okay. There's one that's really grabbing my eye here. Double Dungeoneering XP from the Thieving Locust.
Thieving Locust. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, huh. That one, I mean, I'm not sure what the average XP is for high level 90 plus dungeon, but I mean, if you're, I think we'd definitely be looking at 200k plus Dungeoneering floors with this, wouldn't we?
Oh yeah, definitely. And if you were to put a daily on that, that would even be even more insane. You'd almost get, well, at my level, you would be getting close to 400k experience with a daily.
Wow.
Just an experience.
Yeah, that's pretty insane. So with these cards, there's no way to influence which ones you get now, is there?
Not really. And like I said, you can only get one per day. So it's just kind of a random chance. You go to them and you hope for the best. You are able to hold on to them and bank them.
Good.
But you can never have more than one. So.
Ah. And then, yeah, you just destroy it if you don't want it. Well, this might be a reason to get 95 Dungeoneering after all. I mean, double tokens, if you get one of those, that's nice. The double XP ones, I'm interested heavily in the consistent Yak card guaranteeing a potion recipe. That would be very nice.
Yep, and let's not forget that they also had a level 115 dungeon. I unfortunately can't get into this one yet because my Dungeoneering is 107 right now.
Yeah, and let me just say that if the level 115 Dungeoneers need to tell us about their resource dungeon, then maybe there's something wrong with that. I think if you're 115 Dungeoneering, you can do your own analysis on your own resource dungeon.
Yeah. In the 115 dungeon, you not only need to have that level, but you need to have a total level of at least 2,490.
Oh, that's nice.
Yep. It contains a Motherlode Maw, which you can get into once per day.
Which I think requires the 10 Motherlode shards in order to access, right?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. And another Crystal Flex Standstone, but this one will only give you 25. Mm. So that just kind of ups the amount of combination potion vials that you can make per day.
Very nice.
There is a Slayer monster from Dungeoneering called the Edmu, and you can only attack this when you have a Slayer task.
Hmm, okay.
Wow. And I think it's worth mentioning that this dungeon has the appearance of the Brimhaven dungeon, and the one before it had a warp floor appearance.
That's interesting. That's very interesting that they did that. But, you know, this, I think, is probably one of the... every part of this update seems good this week, except for maybe one thing, but we'll get to that in a bit, that's in my mind. But the Motherlode Maw, I mean, you know, there was some discussion about, you know, oh, maybe the rune items are too common, and Jagex did mention they will be looking into that in the coming weeks. So if you guys feel that the Motherlode Maw is not decent enough, those of you guys who do have 115 know that it is being looked at in terms of rarity and, you know, whether or not it is giving rewards that are appropriate for your level.
Yeah, but I really do like how it has the enhancers. That's really, really nice when you are already maxed out and you're going for comp. Like, the reduction in Castle Wars. I'm so glad that exists, because I am going to try to comp one day.
So basically this means that, there's a certain... I mean, is it random which damage enhancer you get, or...?
Yes.
Okay. So it basically means then that you'll get a certain amount of damage boost toward that creature. Am I correct in that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that's good. I mean... looking at the list here, Eru, you can definitely use it on that. The Qadarn Warriors, Dominion Tower, Nihils, Queen Black Dragon, Rush of Blood, and the Fight Kiln. So that's very good. Very good.
Yep.
And, I mean, I don't want to say, again, that, oh, Dungeoneering's not a skill and whatnot. But, you know, it seems as though it's kind of really filling out its role as a support skill in what will... probably be the last, if not the second to last, resource dungeon that we see for a while. So I guess the Dungeoneers can be happy about that.
Yep, I think when they come out with Floor 61, we'll also see a final resource dungeon for that.
Okay,
tier.
That makes sense. That makes sense. All right. Now, in addition to the Dungeoneering stuff, we got my favorite part of this Elf City batch, too. And that's the 7th fruit tree patch available in this area here. So it's far to the north in the Meliar area. And also right next to the fruit tree patch is the Herb Lore store, where you can purchase the Herb Lore recipes for combination potions, some of which are unlocked in Dungeoneering. But there are a whole bunch of combination potions that you can take advantage of even without unlocking them in Dungeoneering. There's a whole list of them here. I'm not going to read the entire list. I'm just going to go over some of the ones that I feel are really going to change the way we play the game. So starting at the top, the one that means the most to me is the Searing Overload Potion. So for somebody who does the Queen Black Dragon every so often, combining Overload and Anti-Fire into one package really is a great thing, because previously they weren't on the same timer. You had to have two flasks there to help you out. Now you can combine them all into one. This unlocks at level 97 for 700,000 GP, lasts for 5 minutes, and gives you the effect of Overload and Super Anti-Fire. It's definitely one of my favorite potions here. We also got the Supreme Overload, which is essentially a boosted overload from the standard overload. Basically, it takes overload from 15% plus 3 to 16% plus 4.
Which is amazing.
I mean, yeah, you don't think it's that much, but, you know, just a little extra boost on top of that, I think, is going to allow us to, you know, make some of the creatures out there that were previously maybe a bit hard or on the edge of being hard, and just make them that little bit easier. So that one's definitely nice to see. That requires basically an overload potion, then the ingredients to make a second overload potion. So the super potions, in a way. You can also make a potion that grants all perfect Juju skilling potion effects and increases the bonuses from the Voice of Saren. This requires an overload potion, harmony moss, and a crystal tree blossom. That unlocks at level 99 for 1 million GP. And then finally, you got the biggest potion you can get in game, the Supreme Overload Salve, which is a Supreme Overload potion plus an anti-fire plus a super anti-fire, prayer renewal, prayer potion, and super anti-poison, which effectively, as you can guess, boosts your combat stats, restores prayer over time, cures poison, protects from poison, and also protects you from dragon and wyvern fire.
I hope they make a boss that actually hurts you with all of those effects, just so this is useful.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think mithril dragons can poison you, can't they?
No.
No? Okay. Queen Black Dragon cannot. King Black Dragon can, but really, who needs a potion for that, right? yeah, there's nothing that can hurt you with fire and poison you at the same time.
I'm not saying that it's not a cool idea. I'm just saying it's not very useful at the moment.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, these potions are great. I just can't wait to make them after I have some cash on me again.
You can even, you know, make grand potions, as they're called, which is basically super and normal potions combined together, so they give you a bit of a boost so that you don't have to go all the way to extremes. And these are available to sell in the Grand Exchange, the grand potions.
Oh, really?
Yep. Those ones you can sell. Super melee potions, basically the old form of a superset, unlocks at level 81, so you can actually have a superset now in a potion, believe it or not.
Oh, that's something I wish I had a long time ago.
Yeah, and you know, I think that ultimately at the end of the day, people are going to be very thankful for these potions because they come in six, and I mean, you're taking three inventory slots down to one. And you can even get the War Master Potion, which is kind of a bit of a overload light, though it doesn't, you know, keep your stats up. Level 85. Yeah, lots of very interesting things here. Battle Mage's Potion, Magic and Defense combined. The Brawler's Potion is basically an extreme set. But yeah, lots and lots of great things in this. These potions combined with the farming patch are definitely my favorite part of batch 2, I want to say. Those two things that combined.
I wouldn't say that they're my favorite, but they're up there. They look really exciting. I just can't wait to make some. I'm glad I have 99 Herplore to do it.
Yep. Alrighty. So that's Melier, and we've done Heffen. So let's head on over to the Amlot area now, which is Summoning and Divination. Summoning, you know, basically you're given a chance to have a summoning obelisk here, which is in relative close proximity to a bank, which I think this is going to be the new place you want to train summoning.
I don't know about that if you know how to use familiars and maybe the Tokelzo, because that's how I got 99 summoning.
Oh, okay. That was an extremely short run. Using the old standard version to the Piscatoris fishing colony obelisk then?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that still works. But I mean, if you don't want to use a familiar, this is up there.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Daffy D, who is the Impling collector. So you collect basically all the Implings in game, and you'll be given Thinker robes, Thinker trousers, and 50,000 Hunter experience.
Oh, nice.
And a choice between 3x Hunter XP when catching any Impling, or 2x to loot from barehanded Impling catching. So there is a reason to go Impling hunting nowadays. And, I mean, I could imagine, you know, a case where you're, you know, level 95 hunter and you can catch all the Implings. And you run through the world trying to see how quick you can catch them all and, you know, maybe see if you can get this 50k hunter XP done more than once a day, though it might be kind of hard with the crystal and kingly Implings, since I know those are pretty, pretty rare.
Uh-huh.
Also in this area, the Divination Rift, basically a non-AFK way of training Divination, very different than standard Divination training. You got creatures in here who are weak to melee and mage. You kill them, and they have a chance of dropping Shadow Cores, and then you dump these in the Rift for some Divination XP. Larger XP than converting memories, but less regular in terms of how often it can happen.
Should we be concerned that we're dropping darkness into the world?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's that much of an issue, because we do have, you know, the little force fields preventing the creatures from running out of their area, so I'm not too worried about that, because you do have to pass the barrier to go into there. But, I mean, I don't know. It's not Divination training the way Divination was put into the game, that's for sure. And I think this is to give people who want to train combat in the Elf City a little bit of an extra benefit. And at the same time, it's not completely overriding what Divination is or what Divination should be. It's just a nice way of training if you are a little bit bored of standing at a Wisp colony.
Yeah. Me personally, since the day of release of Divination, I just prefer the traditional method.
Yeah.
It just brings back good memories.
Yeah, and I mean, Divination is a non-combat skill and very much a support skill in that way. So I get why they drop Shadow Cores, but this part is not for me. I don't like this way of Divination training. If the cores were more regular and, you know, maybe there was an option to fight one that was weak to ranged, I might be more enthused about that. But with them only being weak to magic and melee, it's kind of a no-go for me, seeing as I already have 99 in those, and I don't exactly need to get any more.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much all there is in the Amlod area. There's also the Fairy Ring, which everybody will have to activate. Should we tell them the Fairy Ring code?
I don't know it offhand here.
Okay. I believe it is DJS, if I remember correctly. That is the code for the Pristina's Fairy Ring, if anybody is wanting to go enter it in. Yes,
yep,
it is
it.
DJS. Yep. Had to double check that my memory was working there. But anyways, we did forget to mention that far up north in the Melier area, the Gnome Glider can also be found there. So there's your other way of getting to the city that was promised.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else on Amlod before we move to the final group, Ithil?
No.
All righty. So, Ithil is crafting and construction. This is where you're given the opportunity to mine the Crystal Flex Sandstone and create the Crystal Flasks, which anybody who has high-level Herblore is going to want to do, even if you're just selling the flasks off. They give relatively the same XP as the flasks in Ooglog and elsewhere, east of Sophanim, where you can mine that sandstone. But still, it's used for a different purpose, and nonetheless, this is something that you'll probably want to end up doing daily, I say.
Oh, yeah. Definitely haven't missed a day so far.
Nope. Same here. There's also a statue that you can carve, one of the god statues with the scaffolding. You can do that there, so that's a nice little piece of construction XP. Other things construction-wise, there is the sawmill operator and the POH portal that was moved here from the Tower of Voices. I think that was the right move. Was that a sigh? Or
I don't know.
What's on your mind?
I guess I don't have much to say about it.
Okay. Just because, you know, you probably don't use your house that much if you're anything like me?
No, I haven't used any of the construction portion of that area. I'm glad that it's existing. I mean, construction doesn't really have a whole lot of use in the game.
Yeah, and that's my number one complaint with the Ithil area as well, is it just feels like a bad excuse for construction being featured here, and, you know, maybe something could have been done that was a bit better. Because, yeah, I mean, we got the statue, you can get that at any other place in the world. Granted, yes, the voice is Saren, but four other places in the world you can build one. Sawmill operator, Taverly, player-owned house portal, tons more useful places than here. And, you know, you're right, it just doesn't feel useful having construction here. And if there was going to be one complaint about Batch 2, it would be this.
I just feel like it was really wasted potential. They could have done something, like maybe put different statues, or had someone that wanted something built for them, and that puts you off into a shard world where you build it for them. Just anything. Yep. Like, or this was just wrong.
Or like they were saying at RuneFest, have a construction thing that you can build in the real world and, you know, let your friends see it if you want, or you can just have sole benefit from it in the real world. This would have been a good place to test drive something like that, even if it's small. Because, you know, it really does, you know, just feel like, okay, it's construction. But anyways, that's enough talking about the construction part. Crafting, I think crafting is something that's very important to do here in addition to the flasks. Not only do we have wet clay, but we also got the harmonium harps, which you can play, that give you harmonic dust. Now, you get a bit of crafting XP from this. Do you think it's a good amount, or should it be higher?
I think it's a good amount because what you're working towards from it is significantly better. I'm doing it for the equipment that comes afterwards.
Okay.
The experience is just a little bit of a bonus, and I think that's the way anyone should look at it, because sure, you get the dragon pick for it, but to move it up to a level 71 item, like, Jagex doesn't just put out new hatchets or new pickaxes very often. And to have a brand new, like, top of the line item, you know, that should be your goal.
Mm-hmm. And you can also do the same thing with the dragon pickaxe here. And, you know, like you said, anybody who is going for mining or, you know, even woodcutting can take great benefit from this. We said that the movement from rune to dragon wasn't that much, but with higher level things coming into game, I do think that the move from dragon to crystal, or at least crystal imbued, I guess we could call it, is definitely worth it in this way.
Yeah, I have 99 in both those skills, but I'm still going for it because that's just an item I want to have. And it's refreshing to not play the game for experience and to more play it for an item.
Yeah, and, you know, I completely agree with that. And that's one thing that the Elf City has enabled. us to do is to, you know, get things in game and play old content, not necessarily in the same old places, but play the content nonetheless to give us something else. And we haven't had this many new things in game since probably the construction skill came out, if I'm thinking far back enough. I mean, you could say, you know, Slayer updates all through the years, that sort of thing, but that was kind of gradual and really, you know, didn't do much for skilling. So this is definitely something out there. Like you said, you play the game for the, you know, item and not necessarily the XP. So in that regard, the harps are just fine in that way. And let's also remember here that this harmonic dust can be used to, you know, create attuned crystal weapons, which gives us a level 80 wand and orb, which previously didn't exist. And, you know, magic gear aside, there really wasn't that much at level 80 that didn't cost an arm and a leg. So if you can find one of these crystal seeds, you know, in the Elf City or maybe something like that, thieve one or pick one up. Or no, wait, you can't thieve one. Sorry about that. You can only get them from combat drops. But nonetheless, an easy way of getting a level 80 weapon relatively without costing an arm and a leg. And this is something that I've been saying has been needed for combat in general for a long time. And I'm glad it's something that's high tier finally.
Mm-hmm.
So, well
high
done.
High tier well, and still needing to have work done to actually get it.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, you can have level 70 and 75 abyssal wands and whatnot, but I think if you're doing high-level combat, 75 does not cut it. You want something level 80 at least. Let's see, what are the ones called from Virago again? Seismics, right, that's what they are. Just to give you a comparison, Seismic Wand, 598 million on the exchange. Seismic Singularity, 181 million on the exchange. And that's a level 90 piece. And, you know, as you get higher, yeah, level 80 is okay for doing most bossing things. And, I mean, Araxor, when that came out earlier this year, it was widely accepted that the lowest you go equipment-wise is level 80. So, yeah, this is something I'm very happy about, even though it doesn't sound like it right now.
Yep.
I don't know. I think we need more of these updates in-game. You know, having skilling play greater effect in combat just because it's something we haven't seen before. I mean, really, previously Virtus Wand, level 80. Okay, that's from Nex. Chaotic Staff, that's Dungeoneering. Let's just see what the Virtus Wands is, just for the hell of it here. Virtus Wand, let's see, how much are you? 25 million. Can you get a crystal wand for less than that? I think you can. So, I mean, yeah, it kind of might devalue the next drop, but the Virtus set does have a set effect, so you got that going for you. And, I mean, Elf City, we've been waiting for this so long. Crystal Halberds, remember those?
It's been so long since I've used a Halberd.
Yeah, and, I mean, when the Elf lands surrounding Priftina's first came out, we saw the elves with crystal halberds, and people thought we were going to be able to buy crystal halberds, but the highest at the time was dragon, so we finally got those that we can make in the attuned version. Level 80 shields as well, so, I mean, this is also a good area nonetheless, and the harps play their role, and you get the attuned crystals, and you can't trade them, which is very nice. Mm-hmm. At least I think so. But
no, I agree.
Yeah. Speaking of that, have you got any of these attuned crystals yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. Yeah, neither have I. I haven't done much combat in the Elf City. To me, it does doing combat there doesn't feel like something you should be doing all that often if you can avoid it.
Yeah, I don't think I've done any combat there yet. Yeah. I've just been mining, agility, just all the skills I can.
Yeah. All right, so that's the Aethelaria, and make no mistake, we are very happy with the harmonic dust and the crystal weapons, even if, you know, it sounds like that was a bit of a rant, but we are happy about that. All righty, so anything else on batch two before we move on to tweaks and fixes from this week? Anything we glossed over or
I don't
just
think we
jumped
could
in
have
your mind?
glossed over anything.
No, we gave it a pretty good thorough analysis here, and I'm sure if we forgot something, our very astute listeners will remind us, won't you? All you guys out there listening. All righty. So, tweaks and fixes this week. I mentioned I had three favorite parts of this update this week. One was the combination potions. Two was the seventh tree patch, fruit tree patch. And the third, all Juju potions, regular and perfect, are now tradable.
Yay!
For the longest time, I avoided doing combat, I mean Hunter, in Herblore habitat. And the reason why is it felt too much like the, oh God, what's that thing called on Lunar Island? Livid Farm. It felt too much like that, in that you need to do all this work to, you know, get to a point where you can hunt these Jadinkos just for the best hunter XP in the game. Okay, I get that. And some people like doing that. But when it comes down to it, it just felt like too much of a task if I wanted to go there, you know, one afternoon and maybe just do an hour-long hunting session. I would have to spend all the time setting up first, making the potion if I didn't have any, that sort of thing. Now I can just go to the exchange, buy a Juju Hunter potion, and off I go. I'm very happy about that. And I mean, there's no reason not to be happy about this because the Juju potions themselves aren't as important in the game as, say, the extreme potions are or the overload, so it's not like making those tradable. So I know there's going to be some people that are upset about this, but I think they made the right potions tradable rather than making, you know, the extremes and overloads all tradable.
Yep, I'm glad that they're tradable because now there's also reward in cash for them if that's what you're doing Livid Farm for.
You
Not
mean
Livid Farm,
Herblore Habitat? Herblore
Herblore
Habitat.
Habitat.
Yes. Let's not talk about Livid Farm.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely something I'll be looking into. And I mean, it just means that I don't need to worry about what's coming from there, and I just get do the Hunter XP. So it's very nice indeed. Patch notes wise, nothing really stood out from the patch notes for me. Anything stand out from them for you?
Not really.
Okay.
I've gone ahead and looked through a bunch of them, but really, it's just I really like the Juju potion update. That's
Yes.
great.
Yeah, and I mean, it's also good for farming because, you know, if you're just running short, oh, you don't need to keep a supply of these vines anymore, that sort of thing. So, once again, third favorite part of this week's update for me, if I had to pick three only. But anyways, there's also some patch notes from Elf City Batch 1, such as, you know, falling leaf particles in the Kruis area, clan names added to the Elf City world map, made the portals of Tower Voices unique colors to show distinction. Crystal weapon and teleport seeds now have unique models. The spirit tree is animated. Just stop me if there's anything you want to talk about. Musicians added to Batch 1. Crystal Implings added to the tree shaking scrimshaw, which is nice. While under Kruis Voice of Saren. Crystal seeds, including attuned, added to a number of Batch 1 drop tables. Very nice indeed, given all the crystal weapons we can sing now. Let's see. Harmonized rocks now appear in the Traherne section. Added more ways of gaining a crystal acorn, particularly from pickpocketing and combat. Still on the hunt for one of those, as I mentioned. Rewatch the cutscene. Coden now sells plant pots with soil and watering cans. Imkondo pickaxe now gives smithing XP when using it on the corrupted ore. Seed swapped with logs on the crew's pickpocketing drop table. That's good, I think.
Yep.
GP rates lowered from pickpocketing drop tables.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
I think people were making mils.
Yeah, like, it was easy to make upwards of 1 mil plus an hour just doing AFK pickpocketing. You know, I see why they did this. It's a large amount of money coming into the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, how many ways of skilling do we have where we can make that much money an hour, right?
Yeah, not very many.
Yeah, and I mean, all the money is in combat, and that's one of the problems with the RS economy. So the question is, how do you balance it? And I guess the idea was chosen is that, you know, it's just you're not doing enough work for this kind of pickpocketing thing. So that's why that was balanced. I can't say I'm surprised on that, though I don't think I like that, mainly because it reduces another way of skilling to make money.
Well, I still think it's a good update because the less gold that's coming into the game, the better.
Yeah, that's true. That's true as well. And, I mean, we saw a huge gold sink with the cleansing stones, right? So, mm-hmm. 130k an hour for 9.3k prayer XP. Come on. That's huge. Huge amount of gold going out just for that. And, I mean, that's like we said earlier, you gotta be a rich person to want to spend that much. Anyways, alrighty. All I can say is wow about this. Yes, polling time. Polling time. But before that, I'll just briefly mention Jagex did put out a podcast this week, Elf City Part 2, talking with Mod Osborne about a number of things in the Elf City. So if you want to hear his perspective on this, what has been his biggest update of the year that he's been involved in, just head on over to their podcast page and give it a listen. So, polling update. Reaction survey, Guthixian caches.
You know, I don't think I did anything with this. I think I completely missed this update.
Yeah, it was kind of buried, you know, at the back of last week's update. A distraction and diversion. And, you know, my analysis of it is that it doesn't happen often enough to get people interested in it. And, I mean, the rewards are kind of like familiarization and, you know, they're not over the top or anything. It's just something you do. And I really, you know, I put myself in the it was okay category, which 9% of the people did. So you would be, what, want to play but haven't, or you don't want to play it?
Yeah, I'd be on the want to play but haven't.
Which is 46% of the people. So this goes to what I said. Doesn't happen often enough. It's once every 3 hours.
Yeah, like, if I had known about it, I probably would have tried to find a way to play it, but it just never seemed to come up.
Or yeah,
I
mean,
actually seen.
It's buried in the D&D tracker in your adventurer's pane. That's really the only way you're going to find when it's happening, unless you're training divination for a long time or you happen to hit the hour right on the spot. So, but 24% enjoyed it, 9% okay, 3% did not like, 46% want to play but haven't, 4% want to play but can't, and 11% don't want to touch it at all. As is the nature of a distraction and diversion, I guess.
Yeah, I think they're starting to put a little too many of those in the game.
Yeah. Okay, now reaction, Elf City Batch 2. As expected, 46% enjoyed it, 8% okay, only 2% did not like it, 13% want to play but haven't, and 26% want to play but can't. Well, 2% want nothing to do with the biggest update of the year at all.
Those people really wanted Inventor.
I guess that's true. Or they're the kind of people, you know, who just do combat and, you know, really don't care about quests, that sort of thing. And, oh, I'm just going to go kill my God Wars and see how many we can do per day.
I'm pretty sure that 2% of people are the people that yell that they're going to quit or go to World 66 whenever there's a bad update.
Oh, yeah. And you know the funny thing about that? World 66 is the evolution of combat world, the members EOC only world. So you gotta wonder why Jagex did that. Anyways, two reaction surveys filling up the two poll slots. It'll be interesting to see if we actually get actual content coming back into the polls here at some point. But anyways, bit of a crafting update on Treasure Hunter, it looks like, this week. The crafting catalysts, basically what this is, from the 14th to the 24th, you have a chance of winning some of these catalysts. And what they do is simply give you the chance of increasing the speed of your crafting training, whether it be tanning your hides, cutting your gems, making gold or silver jewelry. And, you know, this could be very useful, especially for the gold and silver jewelry, just because that takes oh so long to do.
Yeah, this was definitely a different way to go about a skill update, because usually it's just bonus experience, like throwing it in your face, and this, they're speeding it up with these items. That's nice.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if this would be as apparent on a skill of the month, if this was a crafting skill of the month. But I think it's a better way than bonus XP. I will give you that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we just have oh so much bonus XP piling up everywhere. So,
yeah.
It depends. These parts are collected depending on what you're crafting with your catalyst. Each piece of gold or silver item crafted produces one metal setting, and each gem cut produces one gem focus. Each leather item crafted from any number of the hides, dragon hide, soft, hard leather, imp hide, spider, etc., also produces one letter case. And basically what you do in this, you create summoning focuses. Interesting.
Yeah, and those give you 20% extra summoning experience.
Yeah, so, you know, very interesting way of tying these two skills together. Though I have to say, things like this, you know, I think might make a better addition to the summoning skill added in, just because, you know, summoning is the great pouch-making skill nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really not much depth to it, which is too bad. That's something I'd like to see in the future, would be an update to summoning that makes changes like that.
Yeah, I think summoning could definitely get a little bit more diversity in it.
Yeah, I mean, it was supposed to be, you know, this whole third combat type that was great and everything, and, you know, it never really materialized on that. And every time I see an update come into game that, you know, influences summoning in a way, or, you know, touches on something part of summoning, I think, oh, this could have actually been, you know, maybe part of a bigger summoning update. But instead it's going out as Treasure Hunter. But that's just me.
Yeah.
Anyways, the Well of Goodwill. Amazing progress made this year so far. So far around 86 or 87,000 dollars have been raised, which equates to 7,100 bonds and 269,479,994,707 coins donated. People are very charitable, aren't they? And they have lots of money to throw around.
We're so nice.
Did you put anything in the well this year? Or I don't know what your monetary status is currently.
I haven't, but don't think of me as a bad person. I just can't really afford it.
Yeah, same here. But nonetheless, the leader this week has changed in terms of top coin donators. T. Goko is now in the lead with over 9 billion coins donated. And in terms of bonds, Cuckoo has donated 460 bonds.
Yeah, I wonder how he got that name.
I don't know, but you got to be Cuckoo if you got enough money to buy that many bonds, I say. Alrighty. Good work, everyone. Good work, community. Always nice to see that.
Yay.
So, we're getting a treasure trail update next week. What do you got to say about what you see in this BTS video?
Well, treasure trails, good to have an update to it. This one might be a little bit over the top, but I like some of the rewards. I like the ability to reskin top tier armor. That's cool.
That's good. I agree with that. You know, the number one thing that I think is a mistake in the behind the scenes video, granted we haven't had a chance to actually play with it, is the puzzle skipping mechanic that they're putting in. Mm-hmm. Skip a puzzle box, skip a knot, skip a costume entry. Are the knots and puzzle boxes and even the costumes really that hard to find that people need a way to skip them?
I don't know. Some people just have a hard time with them, I guess.
I can understand with the knots. There's something people don't see all that often. But once you do a couple, the algorithm becomes quite clear. And the puzzle boxes themselves have a picture right next to it of what it's supposed to look like. So, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see when that comes out. Maybe this will be a chance to get rich with the reroll thing and get rid of those dang lobsters that you keep getting from level 3 clues. That's, oh, so annoying. Because, you know, that's what I get most of the time from clue scrolls when I end up doing them. Is, you know, lobsters or shark or black dragon hide. My best reward recently was an ancient kite, which was about 250k. Granted, it's rune armor and everything. But nonetheless.
Yeah, nonetheless. I haven't done treasure trails. Wow, I'm stuttering. Since I got 99 Slayer over a year ago. I just haven't done combat because I'm too focused on max. When I did do the clue scrolls, I always knew I was going to get junk. So as I was doing them in the back of my mind, I'm just like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? So I'm glad that they give you a chance to reroll. And I'm glad that's something that you can actually earn from a reward too.
Yeah, and let me just tell you why everybody really should do level 3 treasure trails. I think you can throw level 1 and 2s away if you're really not feeling in the mood to do one of them. But let me tell you the reason to do level 3 treasure trails. Once upon the time, all through, you know, a whole number of years of doing these treasure trails and whatnot, I have got to have found at least 3 Robin Hood hats while doing the level 3 treasure trails. Other things as well, like the black calves when they were upwards of 1 million GP each. Let's also not forget the third age item that I got way back when from a level 3. You know, level 3s have been more profitable for me than the elite ones have been, even though the elites supposedly have a higher chance of giving good stuff. But nonetheless, if it's a 3 or a 4, you really should do that clue. And also remember the God pages. Those things are so expensive now. The page.
Really? They've gone up in price?
Yeah. I mean, Zamorak page 1, 747k. Page 2, 500k. 640k for page 3. 590k for page 4.
Now watch them tank as this update comes out.
Well, I mean, the pages were supposed to be something you can get from every tier of clue. And, you know, the other ones aside from Zamorak are, you know, kind of low in terms of that. So it's not necessarily something that is endemic to all pages, just the Zamorak ones. So, you know, maybe those ones will come into play with that regard if people do end up re-rolling their rewards. But nonetheless, always nice to see treasure trails being updated, because for anybody who was around way back when RS2 first came out, treasure trails were actually one of the first updates that were actually promised to us and was delivered on. It was billed as a little mini game that you would take you around the world and you would find rich treasure, and it's still maintained that to this day. And it's probably one of the better mechanics in game that I enjoy doing.
I agree with that, because it really does take you to areas that you just kind of forget to go to or just don't go to anymore.
Alrighty. Well, that was quite the discussion on Prifiness and other things this week. So with that being said, we'll move on to something a little bit more tame, and those are the listener questions. So if you want to read the first one for us, that would be great.
Sure. This question is from Tyler, and he asks, with the second part of the Elf City coming out, I was wondering what your favorite elven clan is and why. Due to the skill represented training methods available, or because you like the feel of the clan? Thanks, Tyler.
All right. Do you have yours?
I do. I'm not good at pronouncing any of these, but my favorite is the Melior clan, mostly because this has to do with Dungeoneering and Herblore. But I really kind of like how they are about exploration and okay. Kind of like some form of creation.
That makes sense. I agree with that. That's good. Any other particular reasons why? The color or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Definitely the color.
All right. What's their color?
Their color is kind of like a green, light green, and a little bit of a dark blue, I guess. It really matches the computer setup I have in my room.
Oh, okay. Well, that's nice. You know, for me, it's a hard decision to make. I mean, I could go with either Amlod or Cruis. Cruis because farming, of course, right? And Amlod because summoning and divination. You know, I always thought that we would see summoning and Herblore released together, because you know they're run by both druids in a way, and you know I thought maybe that would proceed into the elves, but I guess not. But nonetheless, I think if I had to pick one, it would be Cruis, just, you know, mainly farming. And yeah, that was the first 99 that I got. And it's something that I still enjoy doing to this date. So it's Cruis. That's why, you know, if I had the money off it, I probably would buy the cape, from that. My only disappointment with the Cruis area of Priftiness is that it was so easy to get the of the Cruis title by simply growing an elder tree. I kind of wish there was a little bit more to it.
Mm-hmm. How many elder trees have you grown now?
Well, I mean, they take around 3 days to grow, and yep, my farming right now is on a budget until I get a more sustainable source of income. So I've only grown my first two and then the one for bonus XP weekend. But nonetheless, they do give a nice amount of XP. And it's something that everybody really should look into doing if you can get them. And I think the seeds are even cheaper than magic seeds, too. So there's no reason to grow them. Yeah.
Yep, I've grown two of them so far.
Yeah. All right. I think that answers that one pretty much. Thank you, Tyler. What's your favorite elf clan, Tyler, or anybody else listening for that matter? That'd be nice to know. Post in the comments after the show is released on Saturday on the forums at rsbmb.com/forums. Thank you, Tyler. Next one is from MageGuy08. Hello, everybody. Now that Priftiness is fully released, what do you think the next major update to the game will be? You know, I want to say that it is not going to be something combat related, but I have a feeling I could be wrong. Just because, you know, we've had so many incarnations of the evolution of combat, it doesn't really feel like they're finished, and Jagex really seems to like ripping the carpet out from under us when it comes to combat recently. So I'm hoping it's not combat, but if I had to hope for the next major update to the game that we see in 2015, I would really like it to surround summoning, maybe, or, you know, another big quest finish off. Or maybe just, you know, getting down to it and running the world events like we ran last year and and in December, because I thought these world events were going to be a more common thing, that we'd be seeing one, you know, once or twice a year, not, you know, just having, you know, this the fake one at Easter and then the Bandos Armadale one. Then I'd like to see more world events.
Yeah, I am under the impression that the next major update will be the next world event. But if that's not the kind of tier you're going for, if you're going for like an Elf City tier or a new skill, I'd say that the next big thing that's going to come out would be the starting of the new skill updates instead of Inventor.
Right. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's also something else I'm hoping for. And I don't know if you heard our episode after RuneFest about that, or was that the one you were on? I don't know.
I think I was on one where we talked about it for quite a while.
Okay. So you know where we are going on that, and you know my opinion.
Yep.
But for the listeners out there, if you haven't heard, basically we are both of the opinion that heading for smaller skill updates rather than Inventor is the right way to go, and it allows things to come out faster and be more interesting. And the only fear that I have personally with that is that we'll see Divination just go into a skill where we're gathering these energies and we won't be able to use them. So if we could still have a use for energy, that would be great. I mean, I could always be hoping for another farming update, which we just had, or I could be hoping for the sequel to the Enlightened Journey quest.
Or the next big city, Menaphos.
You think it'll be there?
I don't think it'll be there next year, but 2016 sounds very likely.
Okay. You think we'll see that before the finishing of the Vampire and Myrek storyline?
No. I don't.
So Vampire and Myrek will be first then?
Yep, especially because the mod that works on that quest line has made it very public that she pesters Maud Osborne about it daily.
Ah, yes. Anna, right. That was at RuneFest.
Yep.
Alrighty. Or if I was just shooting from the hip and saying the next major game update that we'll see would be something that is created by the players, that is an idea that has been thrown away by Jagex and is resurrected by a player vote, and brought in by further player votes, that is big, but not for the right reasons, because it turns out to be an update that was influenced by the players, but had to be completely re-engineered by Jagex, which turned out to be the past Halloween update. I'm sorry, I just had to throw that in there because, you know, too many people have always made the thing about, oh, polls are so good, but oh, Jagex actually produced a better Halloween update than the players could.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, I just had to throw that in there, but that's enough discussion on that. Thank you, Magic King, MageGuy08. Alrighty, with that being said, thank you for your questions, everybody. If you want to send in an audio question, send them to questions@rsbnb.com. Make sure you speak clearly and try to keep it under 30 seconds, but 30 seconds to a minute is fine. Or if you don't want to leave us a question on the email address, send it into our Skype, which is RSBNB Update. We look forward to hearing from you. Okay, so now comes the time of the show where we switch gears and talk about something that isn't RuneScape related and relevant to people who use computers. And this week's tech news is widely dominated by Microsoft. So much so that this is ultimately going to affect everybody who wants to learn how to code on Windows or even on other platforms. Because this week, Microsoft is open sourcing Visual Studio and .NET. Oh, I'm sorry, just open sourcing the .NET framework, which basically means that anybody in the world is going to be able to contribute to the .NET server core code, which essentially means that the code that runs Windows and all of the other Microsoft features will be community-driven by the open source community, as we see with many other projects out there. In addition to this, Visual Studio will be made free for all to download, and this is going to create a huge amount of interest within Microsoft platforms, I believe. Are you interested in programming at all?
Yeah, I have one semester left until I graduate for web programming.
Oh, okay. So do you think this would persuade you to, you know, pick up ASP.NET or something like that? Or
I kind of already have. Not to say that I like it that much. I do prefer some other languages. Visual Studio has never been something that I enjoy.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that it's open. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, and free, because previously you used to get these limited express versions of Visual Studio. You could use them for creating personal apps and whatnot, but you still required an MSDN account and, you know, the full multi-$1,000 version of Visual Studio to create professional applications that could get in the Windows Store. So part of me thinks that they did this, you know, not only to, you know, have a wider influence in the market in terms of the technologies, but also to maybe stimulate, you know, the Windows Mobile Store or the Windows Store on Windows 8.
That makes because me wonder, will they pay people back if they just got the newest Visual Studio?
No, probably not.
Because they're doing that with some of the Office stuff. Office 365. Yeah, and I actually qualified for that because I had to get it for school, so I fell into the gap. So eventually I will get a check in the mail from them.
Yeah, and you know, that was a funny thing too. It was made free on iPad and Android, but Surface users still have to pay. Which is just absurd when you think about it, right? But anyways, yeah, I hope that this does, you know, spring those two platforms forward, because both these stores are absolutely desolate compared to the Apple App Stores and even Google Play in that regard. So hopefully Microsoft is making the right call in this, and the developers will take this as, you know, a signal that Microsoft is really moving forward with this and attract some people to this. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why I never, well, one of the main reasons why I never ported my sticky notes application to Windows is because I didn't want to use the Express version. I wanted the full Visual Studio, and I didn't want to pay for MSDN. So, I'm very happy with this. And also, they're expanding their core, their open source core, so that software created for Linux and OS X will be able to work better. So they're actually going to be working very tightly Yay. With the people who create Mono in that regard. So, should be good. And if none of this means anything to anybody out there who's just wondering or has no interest in programming whatsoever, it basically means you're going to see a great amount of better Windows applications coming around and better support on Linux and the Mac for Microsoft products.
Yeah, that's definitely something I'm looking forward to for my Linux-based computer.
Yeah, that's good. Alrighty. This week, the European Space Agency attempted and did to a moderate success land a probe on an asteroid. But there's one small caveat.
It's dying.
The lander. Yeah, it is. It landed 1 kilometer from its original landing site. They don't exactly know where it is. And the reason for this is because the tethers that were supposed to shoot into the comet didn't exactly fire off at the right time. And because the comet has such a low gravitational field, it actually bounced after it landed. Yeah, twice. That just gives you an idea of how low the gravity is on this thing. Just a fun fact, if a human were standing on this comet and he jumped up, he would be able to escape the gravity of it. So, yeah. But anyways, this is supposed to be a science mission to, you know, give us some insight into whether or not comets were responsible for maybe bringing the first life to Earth and bringing water to our planet as well, most likely water and maybe life. I'm not entirely set on that, but we'll see. So hopefully this mission does, resolve its technical problems and is able to work from where they are currently.
Well, right now they actually did find out where it landed. They landed in a crater that is out of the sun. So it's working off a battery until that dies. But when the comet makes a reaches a certain point in its like journey in the solar system, the light will actually hit it again and it'll be able to recharge the battery.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed that, you know, it actually happens that way, and, you know, once there's no damage from it going off like that, but I guess it would just go into power saving mode and like a safety kind of feature, I guess. But, you know, I guess this was mainly because of a technical problem. I mean, the trajectory and everything was just fine because, you know, it's of course computed by computers rather than people.
Yeah.
But you can't solve for mechanical problems that far away, and that's looking like what this was here.
Yeah, but it's just still such an amazing accomplishment to, like, land something on a moving comet.
Oh, yeah. Especially something that's so small, because it's only, like, 1.5 kilometers wide. And that's a very small target to hit in space, believe it or not. So we hope that this will, ultimately become a mission of success rather than failure for this. So, fingers crossed. And our final piece of tech news pertains to Patch Tuesday. It's that time of month when everybody really should be updating their Windows computers. And this is a month where you want to make sure that you do run those Windows updates. So if you are running Windows Update and you're listening to this right now and you haven't, I suggest you pause the show, download Windows Update, and restart your computer. And we'll be waiting for you when you get back. Because once you start listening again, you're going to understand why you exactly want to do this. There's a whole number of remote code execution vulnerabilities, which means if you're using a web browser like Internet Explorer, even though we say not to, it's decent most of the time when it's patched. People can run code on your computer and inevitably harm you. Now, with this being said, there was definitely one interesting patch in here, and do you know why?
No, I haven't read them.
Well, one of these issues affects every version of Windows since Windows 95.
Really?
Yes. There was another, it's basically a remote code execution, and it is able to be exploited remotely since, get this, Internet Explorer 3. Way back when the internet was still forming. This code has existed for that long, and it was just discovered, and it's persisted in all the various Windows incarnations since. But yeah, basically, it even gets by the sandbox in Internet Explorer 11. So this is major, major, major.
How do you miss something like this?
Well, the idea is that when you have a code base as vast and as huge as the Windows code base. There are things that are just going to get put into it, and they appear to work, and they're not going to get looked at for years just because they're working, or they appear to be working. And then you get one researcher who might notice something that just looks a little bit odd in one specific area, then does some prodding, and then looks and sees what's going on here. And then if you look at the code, how long this certain fragment of code or logic has been around that does this thing has existed, you see it goes back all the way to IE3. So that's how you get these things in. It's because they work and nobody bothers to, you know, look at them and see what they're doing. It's just normal everyday computing. That's really what it comes down to. And there's also ones in, you know, the security package in Windows 2, which, I mean, you send packets crafted to a Windows server, you can have remote code execution there. So really anybody who is on the Windows client needs to update, and even the people running Windows servers do as well if you're running Microsoft's web server solution. So probably not that many of you guys out there who run the Microsoft servers, but everybody out there probably does run the Windows client. So just make sure that you've enabled Windows Update and have run your November patch updates. Mm-hmm. So you can have a read through all these on the Microsoft website. But the one that is very interesting that goes way back when to Internet Explorer 3 is MS-14-064. Which is the IE3 vulnerability. Yep. Alrighty, well, that's it for tech news. That's all I got. Hopefully that was interesting to everybody out there. And remember to run your Windows updates as you normally should do every other month, or every month, rather.
Yep, put that protection back on.
Yep. Time for skill of the month. Phishing. Parnassius still in first place with 2.2 million experience gained, which is very respectable. Second place is Flash with 1.3 million experience gained. And third place, hanging on still, is Art of Dvorak, 987,000 experience gained. I was expecting to see more of a race here with it being phishing and a primary skill.
Yeah, I think too many people are busy utilizing the Elf City right now. Now it just came out. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I would have definitely, if I was in this, I don't know, I would have been gaining experience pretty much all day.
Yeah, and you know, it's too bad you can't do any fishing in Priftiness, eh?
Yep. It's so. One skill that should have been in there, maybe to replace construction.
Yeah, I think so. We'll leave it at that. Anyways, moving on to something happier, achievements of the week. Some very good achievements around. As you mentioned, Mr. Bistro, you do have 99 agility now. You got that on November 12th. Good job. And Alex43 got 99 Slayer and Thieving on the 11th of November. So congratulations to him as well. Another Informer writer.
Yeah, beast.
We're just running the table on these achievements this week, aren't we? At Informer. So. Alrighty. Now, pick of the week. Normally, when a guest comes on, we allow them to have pick of the week. But you didn't have a pick of the week this week. And last time you were on the show, you went. So I figured I'd take this opportunity, if that's alright with you.
That is okay.
Alrighty. So this week's pick of the week is an application for iPhone and iPad. It essentially converts your camera on your phone into a scanner, so that basically what you can do is you can take a picture of any document, even if it's crooked, and it will convert it into a grayscale or a color copy of it so that it can be printed out in proper size onto a letter-sized or A4 piece of paper. And then you can upload them to Dropbox, send them through email, Evernote, Google Drive, a whole variety of places where they can be sent. And, you know, this actually, I think, is in many ways better than a scanner, because unless you're looking for top quality in terms of what you're scanning and you're using, you know, your desk office scanner, then that's fine for, you know, documents that need to have clarity in them and photos and whatnot. But if you're looking at just, you know, maybe copying a letter or copying someone's business card into your phone, this is a perfect way of doing it. And even sending stuff you write down, like say you write down a note and you want to send it to someone, you can do it that way. And then even maybe post it into Evernote and use Evernote's image to text search so you can search these notes. So this is a very convenient way of getting pieces of paper into your phone. It's been featured numerous times on iTunes, and it costs $2.99, which, you know, might seem like a high price for an iPhone app these days, but let me say that it is worth it in terms of what you get. So if you have an iPhone or iPad, it's definitely something you should look into, and I can say that it's very useful, especially for students. So
yeah. You can turn your iPhone into a little tiny futuristic fax machine.
Yeah, and the application is called Scanner Pro, and it can be found on the App Store. So just give it a search or find it in the notes at update.rsbamy.com. Okay, what have you been up to this week, Mr. Bistro?
Well, besides work, continuing to work on my Max Cape. Getting really, really close now. Only, I think, 6 skills to go. And spanning those 6 skills is, I think, 17 mil experience.
Oh, it's not too bad. It could be worse, I think. Which skill is going to be toughest for you?
As of right now, it's looking like either hunter or crafting, because I pretty much dumped all of my money into smithing to get that one by the end of next week.
All right. Any ETA on when this entire project will be done, or just whenever?
My goal is before January, because I need to do some bossing to get some cash up, because I'm going to be doing a holiday bond giveaway for the clan.
Oh, nice. Yep. Alrighty. Anything else at all?
Well, I think I might last week, or the last episode I was on, I might have mentioned that I wasn't sure if I was going to still have a job, but turns out all that is A-okay, and nothing has changed. It's just new owners, so that's going to be great.
Alrighty.
What's been going on with you?
Well, this week, mainly just looking at Priftiness and, you know, everything that came out with that. The potions is very nice. Been doing the agility rounds, trying to get the crystal acorn, as I mentioned, so that's probably, I'll continue doing that until I get the acorn and then move on to something else. I might try and also get the crystal wand, we'll see. But yeah, I'm in kind of the same position as you, where I need to do some fundraising to continue the farming and whatnot, because unless I want to farm maples and papayas, it's going to be, it's going to require a good amount of money to do that. So I might have to resort to bossing. We'll see on that. But mainly just farming runs and whatnot this week and Elf City stuff. But yeah. How about you? Good.
Coolio.
I think that means we are pretty much done then for this week's RSBMB update. So we thank you again for joining us, Mr. Bistro. Always a pleasure having you on.
I'm going to miss you guys.
And I believe you have a YouTube channel as well where people can find you.
Yep. My YouTube channel is Dawn Trackers. You can check that out, where we talk about future content and current game updates.
Yeah. Alrighty. Sounds very good. And with that being said, we'll see you next week on RSBMB Update. Remember, if you want to have this delivered automatically to you through iTunes, just hit that little subscribe button on update.rsbmb.com. See you next week, everyone.
Bye.